This is the Sports Troll. I'd like to wish all of the Baltimore fans happy anniversary. Ha ha.
Driving. No purchase necessary.
The following is a live show streaming from two radio show producers / sports fans. Ray Atkinson and Josh Hall have one mission: to gain your attention. This is the Baltimore Sports Free For All.
Well, Josh, this is pretty much my favorite time of year. Do you know why?
Because your allergies kick in and you can do the show on Friday. By the way, how are you feeling?
I had a nasty, nasty flu this past week.
You did not sound good at all.
But, I mean, I sound probably a little nasally right now as it is because I'm still getting over the congestion. But Monday and Tuesday, especially Tuesday, I felt like death.
I think it's these 35-degree, 45-degree, 55-degree days that keep happening in continuation that are kind of affecting your health.
Yeah, the weather is so freaky that when we walked in this studio today, it was colder in here than it was outside.
We got
like dramatically.
I'll say for living in the middle of America, we have some bipolar weather.
Well, I think a lot of people have bipolar weather. They call it climate change. They want to go with and justify it that way. They can't call it global warming anymore because it's cold in summertime.
What about polar vortex? Can we go with that theory once again?
I used to call that winter. So, no.
Yeah. Oh, well, how was your food by Midtown Barbecue?
Ah, it was fantastic. Had some pulled pork, had some macaroni and cheese, and some cornbread.
Always the cornbread.
Yeah, what was on that pulled pork, by the way? What kind of sauce did they use?
That was the yellow barbecue sauce.
Yellow barbecue sauce.
Yeah, I was thinking about going with the spicy yellow, but I think we need to get the sliders next time for that.
Ah, yeah.
So that way we can test and see which sauce we like better. Because The past couple of weeks, I think we had chili and chips with some good food. It was pretty good. Yeah. Everything from Midtown Barbecue is good.
Yeah, I like the sliders especially because you can just try different sauces. But that yellow barbecue sauce, I'm a fan.
You can get some chicken sliders from there too. You've got to try that one of these days. Yeah. By the way, let's give our sponsors some love.
Well, we are giving them some love. We're talking about what we ate from them.
Yeah, but the people got to know where they are.
Yeah, well, Midtown Barbecue. So this week's show is brought to you by the wonderful folks at Midtown Barbecue in the historic Mount Vernon area of Baltimore.
We have to imply historic.
Yes, be sure to check them out at MidtownBBQandBrew.com or give them a call at 443-835-2472.
Yeah, my stomach's already settling in on that barbecue, man. I don't even know if we can go on with the show without resting right now.
I mean, I had a pizza earlier for lunch, a whole medium pizza. I just downed like crazy, like Michael Phelps.
How do you eat food like that and not gain anything?
It's because I work hard.
You work hard and you play hard.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah. I burn a lot of calories.
I don't see how that's possible. Everybody in your family has good metabolism.
Yeah, in my immediate family, yes.
Yeah, in your immediate family.
There are those in the outer parts of the family that do have a little bit of a tummy.
My family can't get good metabolism unless we work out for periods of time. And then if we take a rest period for a couple weeks, gain right back. Yeah, and we're also cursed with big butts, too, but that's another story for another day.
Well, don't rest.
Don't rest.
No just, rest for the wicked, Josh.
Just keep working.
Yeah, just keep working. Keep going.
Keep on keeping on.
No rest.
Yeah.
I would say you only live once, but you only die once. You live every day.
Yeah, but I think that's a journey in the afterlife we're going to have to look forward to then, won't we?
Essentially. No talks of afterlife. I said that word. I'm trying to get rid of that that crutch.
Yeah.
You notice it too?
Yeah, I notice it too.
That's awesome. A lot of people have been picking me apart for that, by saying that word. So every time I say it, I want you to stop my thought, mid-thought, and I want you to bring it to my attention.
Gotcha.
Like I always bring to your attention when you say Jimenez. I'm like, who says Jimenez?
Jimenez.
Ubaldo Jimenez.
And, of course, we're going to be talking about him and the Baltimore Orioles, by the way. Opening day right around the corner.
That's what I'm saying. This is my favorite time of year, Josh, not because we're approaching the 30th anniversary of the Colts moving, as the Sports Troll just alerted us to, but no. Opening day is on a Monday this
Hope
year.
Hope springs eternal.
Yes, it does. And it's going to actually be pretty nice for opening day. I mean, it was nice on the day of this recording on Friday, and it was 61 degrees. even though it was about 30 degrees when we walked in the studio. That's right. How crazy our weather has been. It is warm. It is warmer outside than it is in here.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's going to be 66 degrees on Monday, March 31st, when the Orioles open up against the Boston Red Sox. Red Sox obviously visiting.
Yeah, you see, you wanted to be specific. You wanted to go Monday, March 31st at 7:05 at 1:05 p.m. And what is the exact time of opening day off the top of my head?
I think it's 3:05.
Okay, got it. But, man, the festivities are going to begin all day. Something about opening day that just makes it the better openings of any professional sport.
I'm all for Ozzie Smith wanting it to be a national holiday because it kind of is like a national holiday. Everybody gets together for one good cause, and that's to hang out, join in unison, and enjoy the American pastime known as baseball.
Or a lot of people just use it as another excuse to get drunk.
It's like a second St. Paddy's Day, since it is still technically in March.
Yeah,
so.
Like you have people downtown at Pickles and... former barback that we know, he made about $1,000 on opening day as a barback. A barback.
Yeah.
How much does a bartender get?
Bartenders that I know, on average, on even weekend nights, make about $325 to $350. I mean, that's granted if you're working with one or two more people, but you know, that's still a good chunk of change to bring in, but $1,000? Wow.
As a barback.
I wouldn't know what to do. I wouldn't know what to do if somebody gave me $1,000, put it in my hand.
Treat it like a tax refund.
Oh, my goodness. What would I do? The crazy things I'd think about, but no.
Buy a new laptop like you just did.
I got a little 18-month plan going for it right now, so I'm doing a smart approach with it. See, I'm not putting a whole lot of money away right away, but
okay.
I am doing a smart, economically smart approach with it.
Not pounding it all down. Okay, that's a fair trade.
Yep.
So we are at opening day for the Baltimore Orioles. And we have to think, what is the season going to foretold for this team that seems to have switched its fortunes in the last 2 years?
Or how about a team that most national pundits are even...
Who cares?
It's irking me a little bit.
Why? Who cares what they think?
How, after the moves they made, signing Ubaldo Jimenez, signing Nelson Cruz, and oh, by the way, signing Johan Santana to a minor league deal, your team is automatically better than the team you had before. Granted, we don't know who the closer is going to be, and granted, we don't know who the starting second baseman is going to be for the long run. I'm hoping Jonathan Scope, of course, will get to him in a little bit.
I mean, you're talking about national pundits like Merrill Hodge, who thinks that Michael Sam's going to be a better player than Jadeveon Clowney.
80 wins is like the max I'm looking at, and I highly disagree with that. And NBCSports.com, SI, ESPN all have this team no higher than 80 wins, and some have them at 78 wins. And looking at the team and how they've been the past couple years, I just don't see it happening.
Oh, okay, what was the prognosis for the Ravens when they won the Super Bowl?
I'm saying I think it was like 9-7, 10-6. Of course, they did end up going 10-6, but not going to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, so what national pundits again?
SI, NBC Sports, Vegas.
Why do people in Baltimore care what people think about them nationally?
It's the chip on the shoulder. We want respect, damn it.
I just don't get the inferiority complex.
It's all about defending your turf.
I think you know what started this whole inferiority complex, though?
What?
Bob Irsay.
Yeah, no, we're going to have
to... Moving the team.
We're going to have to get to that in a little bit.
Because that sparked the whole Paul Tagliabue putting a team in Carolina and putting a team in Jacksonville before Baltimore, and they're saying to Baltimore, go build a museum with your money. And ever since then, everybody thinks that there's this big conspiracy that the NFL hates Baltimore.
Yeah, it's a shame we're going to have to get to that towards the end of the show, as well as talking about our brackets and some Ravens news, some good, some kind of bad in national perspective.
See, there you go again. National perspective. Who cares?
Well, when you are a Pro Bowler and a Super Bowl champion, the light is going to shine on you a little brighter across the United States in terms of professional football news. So, yeah, it is still kind of bad either way. I mean, obviously, look, let's put that all to the side later. Let's talk Orioles baseball because this is what matters right now. This is what is important, and I think important not only in the media but in all the fans that are looking forward to it. They did make some moves over the past week, and Monday they acquired a very decent infielder, second-generation MLB player, Steve Lombardozzi. So And there you go. I think looking at how you're going to shore up the infield, and granted, Ricky Weeks, Jamal Weeks.
Yeah.
Just not hitting his weight in spring training and making that Jim Johnson trade to Oakland look terrible.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you couldn't get really anything in return for Jim Johnson, even though you wanted Grant Balfour.
Yeah.
That would have been that would have been an awkward trade, considering the fact that they traded Jim Johnson, Oakland gets rid of their closer, and the Orioles pick up Grant Balfour through a free agency. A trade for free that how many times has that happened in the history of professional sports?
I think it's happened quite a few times, and granted, no pun intended for Grant Balfour, you were hoping that he was going to be your closer, but of course, the experts at the Orioles medical staff, and I use the term experts lightly, thought that he wasn't healthy enough to pitch for this team, and of course, that almost single-handedly ruined the Orioles offseason and their chances of signing stars. Granted, it did help him out a little bit signing Ubaldo Jimenez and Nelson Cruz and Johan Santana, so that kind of restored faith in the free agency pool in years going forward. But you're getting a little cozy there, aren't you?
Yeah, it can't make up its mind what it's going to do in this studio. Is it going to be cold? Is it going to be hot? Is it going to be up? Is it going to be down? Or all around?
Well, the experts at the certain weather stations in Maryland predict that it's going to be 66 degrees on Monday, March 31st, opening day. So I don't think you'll need that jacket for very long.
Yeah, but that Grant Balfour debacle would have pretty much represented the Orioles offseason in a nutshell if they didn't do anything else. But thankfully, they got the players that you just mentioned. And now we have to look at it like this. You have a report saying that Jonathan Scope is going to make the 25-man roster.
That's right. According to some national websites, even NBC Sport, see, there I go again. According to NBCSports.com, second baseman Jonathan Scope will make the Orioles opening day roster and start at second base. Obviously, he's also going to rotate between second base with Ryan Flaherty and some at third base with Steve Lombardozzi.
Yeah, so you talk about the national perspective. That's a national news story that's being reported, not national opinion.
No, like the 80 wins that most of the pundits out there think the Orioles are going to have this year. 80 wins, 78 wins. I'll tell you what, I think my prediction for the Baltimore Orioles and their standing is going to be much higher this year. Of course, a local legend around here in broadcasting, Bob Haney, said on Facebook that if the Baltimore Orioles get 80 wins, just 80 wins, no more than 80 wins, he's going to wear a Yankees hat for the for a month. I'll say this, if the Baltimore Orioles get no more than 80 wins, I will shave my head completely bald.
Wait, if they get no more than 80 wins?
If they get no more than 80 wins.
So if they have 80 or less, 79, 78.
Yep, that's right.
You're going to shave your head.
Completely bald.
Wow.
But I will say this. If the Orioles win the division, if they win the American League East, I'm dying this whole baby orange.
Huh. So it's a lose-lose situation.
How is it a lose-lose situation?
Because either way, you're going to look weird.
Hasn't that been my mantra for my entire life up to this point?
I don't know. Has it?
Kind of.
If it is, why?
I don't know. Why be normal? What is normal?
What is normal?
Yeah, what is normal?
72 degrees, room temperature.
Okay. Would a normal prediction for the Orioles be, let's say, 88 and 74? Or how about 90 and 72?
Okay. If you want to say they have 90 wins, I wouldn't say you're too far off. Not with that pitching staff.
Should we go higher?
Not with that offense.
Should we go higher?
Yeah, you're kind of stretching it a little bit.
Now I'm stretching it.
Yeah, maybe. I'd say 90 wins would be in fair territory as a not being a delusional Oriole fan with the predictions.
Can we say 91 and 71? Can we do that? Is that pushing it? Am I pushing my luck now?
No deal.
So 90 and all right, 90 and 72.
Yeah.
90 and 72 is me and Ray's prediction, apparently, for the Orioles. Do they win a division or are they a wild card contender?
They will. I want to say that they will be a wild card contender.
Here's the thing. I don't believe too much in the Red Sox. I still consider last year kind of a fluke in a way. I don't think. I mean, granted, Koji Uehara ended up being the World Series MVP, but I just don't see him being a dominant closer for long, and I think that's going to create some controversy in Boston. Also, the New York Yankees are getting older and older, and with Derek Jeter almost out the door, I think that's going to be the downfall of their franchise right there once he leaves. And, of course, Toronto is going to be Toronto. You know, they're going to have some good months, some bad months. And Tampa Bay, I think Tampa Bay could end up being the division winner this year. Their pitching has been strong for how many years now?
Yeah, but they'll still not attract sellout crowds towards the end or in the playoffs.
Still, though, they're a scrappy team, man. They're a scrappy team. They're a tough team to face. Even at home, they're tough to face.
I just love their whole business model as the draft the guys, build them up, and then when they're about to ask for more money, and since you're a smaller market team that can't draw, I would say, okay, bye-bye. We'll sign somebody else.
And I love Buck Showalter as much as the next Baltimore native, but how cool is Joe Maddon as a manager?
He ranks
up there.
Didn't he have like the Mohawk for a little while when they were making that original playoff run in 2008?
Yeah, he did. And they went to the World Series that year, didn't they?
In that year?
Yeah, and they lost to the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that year was the turnaround for the Tampa Bay Rays franchise because you were talking about a team that couldn't get over 70 wins in their first 10 years of existence. Now they average pretty close to 80, 85 plus.
I will always despise the Red Sox. I will always despise the New York Yankees for obvious reasons. But Tampa Bay, as much as there are, you know, have been a rival of the Orioles the past several years, they kind of hold a place in my heart for respect.
Well, they were rivals to the Orioles when they were the Devil Rays.
The Tampa Bay Devil Rays.
Yeah, the main reason is because they
take the devil out of our name.
They were battling for the cellar of the AL East.
Yeah. But I wanted to touch on Lombardozzi real quick, you know, and I think this is going to help him out too, as well as Steve Clevenger, who's a native of Maryland. You know, Lombardozzi, 25 years old, is a native of Fulton, Maryland. You know where Fulton is?
Fulton? Is that like in the western part?
I think so. Yeah, for anybody listening to this podcast, and obviously you'll comment on the link we'll post later, tell us where Fulton is because we're having a hard time kind of thinking about it.
Or is it on the Eastern Shore?
I don't want to cheat and look at my phone because I feel like we're, you know, cheating ourselves.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I'm going to guess and say West. I'm going to say it's West. But yeah, I mean, you look at Lombardozzi, 264 career hitter, even though the on-base percentage doesn't impress me, 297. The 264 is still decent enough as a hitter.
How old did you say he was?
25 years old. Okay. We'll be 26 in September.
And how many years of major league experience does he have?
He's entering his fourth year in Major League Baseball experience.
Wow. So yeah. He got called up at a young age.
Yeah. So I think there's some good positive outlook for Lombardozzi being on this team, especially since you trade Alex Gonzalez, who was pretty much an aging veteran, and you weren't going to really do much with him anyway. So you pretty much traded a guy to the Detroit Tigers who wasn't probably going to make the opening day roster for a guy who's likely not only to make your opening day roster, but be a key contributor on your bench. That is a good move.
Mm-hmm.
And also a move that I highly agree with, as well as you do. Manny Machado is going to start the beginning of the year on the 15-day disabled list, which I'm cool with.
Yeah, you really don't want to rush him back in a 162-game season. You have plenty of wiggle room that you can deal with to make sure this kid is right.
A Manny Machado at 100% is way better than a Manny Machado that's at 80%, if that.
And he is the future of your franchise, so you got to take care of him. And take care of him they will with his rehab program. Even though he has had a few setbacks, he's still, you know, not going. He had scar tissue in his knee, which is pretty common for that type of injury. But he'll be able to come back, and he'll be able to hopefully be the Manny Machado we know and love.
All right, let's look at the 2014 predictions for the Orioles. Obviously, we talked about wins. You said 90-72, and I said 90-72.
You said 90-72.
Yeah, but you agreed with it.
I said that would be the max that you would be not delusional at.
Okay, all right, Mr. Non-Delusional, who do you have the Orioles at? Where do you have the Orioles at?
I established 90-72.
Well, there you go. So you agreed with me.
I said that was the max to where you're not delusional.
But is that what you agree with, 90-72?
Yes.
Okay, so 90-72 we agree upon. So
yes,
that's
it's
the
not
end right
too
there.
Far-fetched.
Okay, who do you have leading the club in home runs this year?
Obviously Chris Davis.
Do you think he hits 53 like he did last year?
I'm going to go with no.
Does he hit less than 45?
Yes.
Does he hit less than 40?
Yes.
What's he hit?
I'm going to say 38.
I'm going to have one less. I'm going to say 37, but still, even 37 home runs out of
Christmas. One less? What is it? The Price is Right. Oh, wait, that's one more. The Price is Right.
Yeah.
Where they do like, what was the last bet? $25.
I'll take
26.
I think 37 is a respectable number, especially for a guy coming off a 50 home run season.
I will say, though, if somebody did that to me on The Price is Right, I have to reach across the podium and punch him.
Oh, be a bump, bump, bum, bum.
No, betting $1 higher than me.
Okay. And he ends up winning.
I would sure you can. Ryu style, Street Fighter.
What if it was an 80-year-old grandma from Florida? You're telling me you would punch her?
No.
Okay.
No.
That would not look good for you.
If it was a dude my size, then yes, we would come to Street Fighter.
Very aggressive person, Ray
Atkinson. If it's an old lady, I'd just be like, You get a death stare from me.
Does Chris Davis, because you think, and I think he's going to lead the club in home runs, does he lead the club in RBIs?
No.
Who do you have?
Jones.
Same here. How many?
119.
I'm in that range. I'm going to say 110.
Huh.
I think 110 is pretty damn good for a guy who's establishing himself as an all-star, and quite possibly now is the time for him to establish himself as a potential MVP candidate.
I mean, he is your best all-around player. He's a, I guess I'm going to have to say it, he's a poor man's Joey Votto.
And granted, Joey Votto, you really think he's a poor man's Joey Votto? I think he's a little better than Joey Votto.
Well, look at the contract that Votto got. And, okay, maybe I'll say poor man's Andrew McCutchen.
Okay. I call Andrew McCutchen a poor man's Adam Jones, but yeah, okay.
Okay, we're going all over the place with these types of
Jones,
the poor man versions here.
Granted, Jones goes for that golf ball, which annoys the crap out of me whenever I watch it because you know it's going to be a strike three when you chase that ball, but that's also his best contact pitch.
Yeah, Josh, you fail more in baseball than you succeed.
I know. 3 times out of 10, you're successful. I get that.
So you say, man, low and outside curve, but he's still one of the better two-strike hitters in the league.
Speaking of low, David Lowe, I have him leading the club with the most stolen bases, and I think he is going to steal a lot of bases this year. Why? I just think he's going to get a lot more playing time, and from what I've seen in spring training, he looks like he has some speed.
Now, I know your common saying with him is a poor man's Nate McLeod.
I say rich man's Nate McLeod.
Rich man's?
Yeah.
Rich man's Nate McLeod.
Yeah.
Okay, so I went opposites on that one.
I'm going to say 35 stolen bases.
See, we don't always agree here, folks.
Yeah, well, who do you have leading stolen bases?
I was going to go with Jones. I was going to go with, like, 23.
You have him stealing 23? I think he's going to steal 15, 16. I don't think he's going to steal much this year.
I think he might steal a little more just to create a little bit of a running game.
How about batting average? Who do you have?
Jones.
I have Nick Markakis. I have him leading the club in batting average at a 327.
All right, I was going to go Jones, but I was going to go 315.
315, you're a leading hitter.
Yes.
Will anybody else hit 300?
I will say possibly.
Does Matt Wieters hit 300? Or am I wishing well too
much? I think that's a little wishing well.
Yeah.
You know, he is in a contract year.
He is in a contract year. That's right. Needs that Scott Boras money. All right, let's go to the pitching side. Who leads the club in wins?
Tillman.
Yep, I got Chris Tillman. I think he gets over the 20-win hump. I think this is the year, folks, 2014. Now, obviously, I'm going to talk a little football here. This is the year Chris Tillman gets over 20 wins, and this is the year Joe Flacco finally gets over 4,000 wins. So, yeah, you heard it right here first on the 26th edition of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
Yeah, but I think Joe Flacco has had more time to get over 4,000 passing yards than Chris Tillman has had to get 20 wins. And why are we comparing football and baseball?
I don't know, because it's those certain accolades that are, like, staring at him in the face, like, I know I can get to you, but for some reason you're not letting me allow it.
It's like you want to compare the Ravens to the Orioles, and you have the Raven fans who are just catching on the Orioles bandwagon and see them lose a game. It's like, the season's over. Wait for the other shoe to drop. Same old Orioles.
I know a lot of people like that. Yeah, and it's sad to say, but even though, look, if you're going to root for the team, I'm not going to hold it against you. But if you jump off, don't expect me to catch you back on the boat.
I just don't get what the whole waiting for the shoe to drop came from. They've only started off good and flamed out towards the end once in that 14-year losing streak. That was a shoe dropping?
Yep.
Did you take your shoe off while I was talking?
I was demonstrating the shoe falling off or dropping the shoe.
Yeah, or you fading off to the microphone. You got to speak into it, Josh.
I dropped the shoe.
Okay.
You were waiting for the shoe to drop. There was the shoe. It dropped.
Yeah, so these fans waiting for the shoe to drop, it only happened once in their 14 years of losing where they went, I think it was 05, where they led the division at the All-Star break, and all of a sudden you had Palmeiro get pegged for steroids, Brian Roberts get hurt, and a whole bunch of things.
Sammy Sosa sucking.
And a whole bunch of things. He sucked regardless. The whole the whole thing hitting the fan.
He was supposed to hit 45 bombs that year. Remember, yeah. Remember what everyone was saying when they traded Jerry Hairston and Peanuts to the Cubs for Sammy Sosa?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. All right, who leads the club in strikeouts?
All right, so who leads the club in strikeouts? I want to say it's going to be Jimenez.
How many?
Well.
Because I agree with that as well.
I was going to go 180.
211.
Good grief.
Think he's going to strike some guys out at the plate.
That is very high. 200 strikeouts, you're really good.
I think, is that All-Star good?
200 strikeouts is All-Star good, yes.
But what if he has a high ERA, like a 3.9 or a low 4?
Well, there's that as well. Yeah. And then you also have the win-loss percentage, which for a pitcher, to me, is the most overrated stat in baseball.
Or the baseball stat nerds who look at WHIP, which I never look at in the first place.
Walks and hits per innings pitched?
I just don't look at it that way.
To me, that's the end-all, be-all telling stat. That and your earned run average.
You just got to win, man. I mean, even if you have a high ERA, if you can end up winning the ball game, that's all that matters.
Okay, how about this? You're a closer, right?
Yep.
And you have...
Let's not even talk about Jim Johnson's whip, because I'm sure it was terrible last
year. No, let's say this. Okay, you've got 45 saves, right?
Yep.
But you've got 7 blown saves. But you've got 7 wins.
Yeah.
Because you blew the save and allowed it to tie, but then... The Orioles come on in the bottom of the inning, and they win in the bottom of the ninth, and guess who's the winning pitcher?
You are.
The guy who blew the save.
Yeah, exactly.
You'd
have to have a lot of home games to blow right
if
there.
If it wasn't for you, they wouldn't have to win the game in the bottom of the ninth.
If you blow a lot of games at home, I'm sorry, you have no business being a closing pitcher. I'm sorry, you just don't. So, all right, keep it on with pitching. Who do you think has the best team ERA?
Well... I wanted to go with the starters, and you're going bullpen.
Yep.
So I'm looking at the best starter ERA and the best bullpen ERA. We're both in agreement on the bullpen, which is Darren O'Day.
Yep. 1.75 for him.
That's a little low for me. I was going to go sub twos, but okay, you can go with that. But when it comes to starting pitching, would I go out on a limb to say Bud Norris?
You really think Bud Norris is going to lead the starting rotation in ERA?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think Tillman will end up being that guy. I see Tillman being a 3-3 kind of guy.
Either 3-3 or 3-2?
Yeah, 3. You know what? 3-2. 3-2 probably earns him another All-Star bid. But
yeah, because I think a lot of people underestimate Bud Norris.
Yeah, because I think Jimenez is probably going to hit, get a 3.9 or low 4. Norris, I see him being somewhere between a 3-8 and a 4-2. I think he's going to be around that range. When he's really good, he'll be a 3-8. When he's bad, I think it's going to be a 4-2.
All right, what about Miguel Gonzalez?
No comment.
What about...
Wei-Yin Chen?
Wei-Yin Chen,
no
yes.
comment.
What about, if they bring him up, Kevin Gausman?
Kevin Gausman is going to be the next Jim Palmer of this club.
Whoa! Can we write that one down and mark it on the tape?
He will be the next Jim Palmer.
We have to write that one down, and we'll grade you as a pundit and see if you were right 20... Is it fair to say 20 years from now?
20 years from now, sure. Why not?
Okay, so you'll be close to 50.
I'll either be a genius or a crackpot. Yeah, I'll take it.
Wow, 20 years from now, we'll both be close to 50.
Well, I'll be 49, since I do turn 29 in May.
Yeah, so. I'll be 40. 20 years from now, we're going to be in our late 40s.
20 years from now, podcasting may have evolved.
Yeah, to virtual reality.
To small little devices.
They have those.
Jeez.
They're called iPods, you know?
I know that.
That's where the whole phrase podcasting came from.
Oh, my goodness. All right, since we mentioned bullpen, who gets the most saves this year? Since everyone's saying Tommy Hunter is likely to be the closer.
It's going to have to be Tommy Hunter. I can't see anybody else stepping into that role at this point.
How many do you think?
Well, you said...
45.
45,
yep.
And you said also... In our pregame spiel, that if they can't get over 40 saves, then this team is not making the playoffs.
I said they have no business being in the playoffs if they don't have a closer that has over 40 saves.
Well, I said 42.
42? 42 is reasonable. I'll
42
see that.
For Tommy Hunter, but how many blown saves does he have?
I'm going to say 7. I think it'll be 7.
I was going to go 5.
Anywhere between 5 and 7 is kind of a healthy number for blown saves. Nothing like what Jim Johnson did last year. After 10, I lost count.
Yeah, that Arizona series. Oh, boy. That's when I really started to...
That was the end right there.
When he blew those saves in Arizona...
Games they should have won.
I actually pounded the desk. I was like, come on, Johnson!
The Incredible Hulk coming out of Ray Atkinson right
there. Jeez, he's like the 21st century version of Don Stanhouse.
Who do you see being your team MVP?
Adam Jones.
I got Adam Jones as well. I think this is the year for him to be an MVP contender, and I think, obviously, he will be the team MVP, and I see many critics abroad thinking he'll be an MVP consideration.
I'm sorry, anybody that cracks on Adam Jones and will...
His golf ball swing.
And will, you know, pick him apart like crazy.
Blowing the bubble before catching the ball.
I just laugh in their face because you're thinking to yourself, he is the best all-around player the Orioles have, and when it comes to all-around ability, is one of the better players in Major League Baseball.
I'll say this about Adam Jones. He's a five-tool player, and for every mistake he makes, he does three things to make up for that mistake.
He's got power, he's got speed, he's got great fielding, he's got contact. This guy's got wherewithal smarts. He's a good clubhouse presence. I mean, what more do you want?
You know, I'm going to keep count on social media, Facebook primarily, how many fans are going to bitch and complain about Adam Jones blowing a bubble and causing an error. And by the way, you can't even count the error. I mean, you can probably count the errors on one hand. He's that good of a fielder.
Yeah. And
nobody's perfect. Nobody is a perfect fielder.
And considering he blows a bubble just about every time he catches the ball because it's a crutch. It's like me saying essentially.
Manny Machado, who many fans want him to be the next Brooks Robinson, but instead of doing the right thing and let him be the first Manny Machado, he's going to make mistakes at third base. But he's one of the best damn fielders this team has. Same with Adam Jones. So I mean, you got to put him in that light. All right. Who's your surprise All-Star? Who do you think from this team, out of the usual All-Stars? All right. Let's put away Chris Davis. Let's put away Adam Jones, JJ Hardy. Who do you have your surprise All-Star this year?
Bud Norris.
You think Bud Norris makes the All-Star team?
Yeah.
Okay. You gave me the crazy eyes when I said Kevin Gausman could be the next Jim. Will be the next Jim Palmer. But you really think Bud Norris is going to be that good to make the All-Star team in 2014?
Josh, you said surprise.
I know.
Surprise!
Keyword, surprise. Nick Markakis will be my surprise All-Star entrant.
There are a lot of people riding high on Nick Markakis this year because they really think that he's going to turn it around this year. And I really hope he does because he is the last bastion from that 14-year losing streak.
Oh, you got to put Adam Jones in there as well. He kind of came in during that time.
Yeah, he came in, what, 07?
I think it was 08. He came in with George Sherrill and Chris Tillman and Cam Michelio, who
Cam Michelio.
We never heard from again.
Boy, I love that name.
Yeah. But, yep, I think Nick Markakis, like I said, he was going to lead the club in average with .327, and I think that's going to be good enough as probably one of the best leadoff hitters in the game.
By the way, random fact about Cam Michelio. I remember the first year he came over to the Orioles and he played MLB The Show. They pronounced him Cameron Micolio.
Sounds like a disease.
Cameron Micolio?
Cameron has Micolio disease.
Micolio disease.
Which means he throws an 80-mile-an-hour or lower fastball, which gets knocked out of the park 7 times out of 10.
I thought that was Johan Santana right now.
Oh, man.
Although he did have a pretty decent bullpen outing the other day.
He's going to get a couple good outings in Norfolk, and I think I'm praying that he gets back to form, and I hope we see him in the rotation
because
later
this guy has a career ERA of 3.2. So,
and as we talk about the excitement of Orioles baseball, because like I said, hope springs eternal. We're hoping for 90 wins. We're hoping for a great season. Obviously, we'll talk about the low lights of the season too. Because hey, you can't talk about wins without talking about losses. And moving on to the Baltimore Ravens, they actually acquired a center / offensive guard from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for a reasonable draft pick trade.
Yeah, so they've trading away draft picks, but they got compensatory picks as well from all the free agents that they lost.
So
and
it kind of makes up for the losses there.
It's like they're shuffling the deck of cards right there. It's watching a genius at work that is Ozzie Newsome. The guy knows what he does day in and day out. Just like people who make fun of Adam Jones, I will laugh at them. I will laugh at people who make fun of Ozzie Newsome. I'm like, do you really think that you're smarter than Ozzie Newsome, who won two Super Bowls?
Well, according to ProFootballFocus.com, which has been the newest website, the great offensive linemen, finally, we have a website which tells us how good offensive linemen really are, according to certain statistics. So there's that. With Jeremy Zuda from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the Ravens acquired him for a fifth-round pick in a 2015 draft. And entering his seventh season in the NFL, he's a very versatile offensive lineman, 6'4", 308 pounds. And odds are, unless the Ravens draft a center in the first round or second round, it looks like he could end up being the starting center for the Baltimore Ravens.
Boy, he is a tall bastard. 6'4".
I wonder if, you know, I rooted for Gino Gronkowski last season to be the heir apparent to Matt Burke. But how bad he was last year, it makes me think, is Zuda any better? Is he going to be any better?
We can only find out when the season comes, but the little discussion that I had with you is that the season is far off. We're talking about opening day here for baseball.
Right. But also, when we were looking at Zuda, he came from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Granted, he had a $4.5 million cap hit. You know, did the Tampa Bay Buccaneers get rid of him and hoping to draft somebody better in the fifth round? Or did they get him because, hey, he's bad for us, you can have him, which I hope is not the case for the Baltimore Ravens because they've had enough trouble on the offensive line last season. They don't need any more ills.
Yeah, so when it comes to centers and guards, it's a crapshoot unless you talk about the elite guys. And you can have some people come in and, you know, make surprise waves, or you could have those who could be disappointments later on down the road. It all depends on, are the guys playing in the right positions, as we found out in that 2012 Super Bowl run.
I mean, you could look at current guys like Alex Mack, who many people consider the best center in the National Football League. You could also even go back in the past and say Jeff Saturday was a damn good center. Granted, he doesn't look anything like a center nowadays if you watch him on television.
Oh, yeah, lost all that weight. But I'm looking at this zone blocking scheme they're going to have. And I can't help but look at how Kolechi Osemele.
The Z word. The ZB word.
But I can't help but think of how Kolechi Osemele is just going to dominate in that scheme because I like watching the kid on offensive line when you can because
he's a beast.
Yeah, Kolechi Osemele, I think, is going to have a really good year this year, blocking in Gary Kubiak's offense.
Yeah, I think Kolechi Osemele, along with Marshall Yanda, granted, if they both recover from a terrible 2013 season, they are damn good offensive guards. And, of course, Eugene Monroe, you know you got him for the next 5 years at left tackle, so you know you got somebody solid on that end. Right tackle is still going to be a big issue for the Baltimore Ravens because unless they can sign somebody sometime in the offseason, maybe after the June 1st veteran cuts, or draft a prospective first rounder as a right tackle, they need a plan fast. Obviously, you got to have faith in what Ozzie Newsome has done so far this offseason. Of course, re-signing some key guys, getting Steve Smith to add some veteran presence to the wide receiver core. But looking at Jeremy Zuda, I don't think he is a out-of-this-world upgrade. But I will say this. He is probably better than what you have on the depth chart now. And I think that's all you can hope for at this point.
Yeah. 4.9 or 4.1?
He had a 4.1, 40-yard time?
No, I'm talking about
he had a 4.99 40-yard time. Is that what you're
no,
thinking?
No, I'm talking 4.9 cap hit.
4.5 cap hit.
4.5, okay. I thought I heard 4.9 somewhere there.
But obviously, Ozzie Newsome and his Baltimore economics, I'm sure they'll lower that number as the years go on because he still has a couple years on his contract,
I believe. But to say, if a freaking offensive lineman could run a 4.1 40 time,
then he shouldn't be an offensive lineman.
No, he should be a running back at that 6'4", 308, and running a 4.1, yeah.
That's like freakish right there. I can't even imagine. He'll be running over linebackers left and right.
He'll be like, yeah, it's the juggernaut, bitch.
Oh, man. It's a shame we got to go from that light topic to moving on to something.
Are you really segueing to that Ray Rice story after I just said, I'm the juggernaut, bitch?
I'm trying to calm the laughter down in my heart right now.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, obviously, yesterday on Thursday, Ray Rice was indicted by a grand jury on third-degree aggravated assault stemming back from the New Jersey casino incident with his fiance.
Yeah, they upgraded it from simple assault, which now it is safe to assume that that video of the uppercut, the sure you can, exists.
Yep, and in the state of New Jersey, a conviction of a third-degree crime in the state carries a potential sentence of at least 3 years and a fine that could be up to $15,000. So I'm not going to say it's reminiscent of the same type of issue, but if you could remember years back when Plaxico Burress was in a nightclub in the state of New York and shot his leg in the club with a gun, guys served some time for that, you know, and, you know, states like that, states that take gun laws seriously and even states that take assault seriously, it's kind of hard to combat that even when you have the best lawyers. So I really don't know what to say about this whole situation at this point with Ray Rice. I mean, you hear all these things about him in the offseason that he's been losing weight, that he's been keeping in shape and trying to recover from the situation. But now that the situation came back and is worse than it was before, it's not looking good for him.
Nope, but at the same time, we did see Michael Vick come back from what he had to come back from.
Granted, I have my disagreements about that, of course.
I said come back what he had to come back from, and yeah. I act like that it's adversity that was, you know, he had a broken leg or something like that. No. This was something self-inflicted stupidity from Michael Vick that he had to rebound from, so to speak, and he got that chance because of the Philadelphia Eagles, who signed him after he got out of jail and after he served the suspension. What was it? He served jail time first, then after he got out of jail, had to serve the one-year suspension. So he was out of the league for 2 years. And his last year in the league before he went to jail wasn't his best. So I think Ray Rice can recover if he were to serve some jail time. And as we saw, you don't have to be convicted of anything to get suspended by Roger Goodell.
No, he's definitely going to face some wrath from the commish.
Yeah, we can debate about the validity of that until we're blue in the face, but the fact of the matter is, it is a hard truth that the NFL has, is that Roger Goodell will put the suspension hammer on you. It's a reality, and it's one that Ray Rice will have to fess up to, considering the fact that the grand jury now thinks that they have enough evidence to where they can go for an aggravated assault charge as opposed to a simple assault charge, which, by the way, they dropped the charges against his fiance.
It is a little odd that they were trying to reconcile and were on good terms, but in the court of law, when they bring something up like this, it's usually concrete and it's hard to, you know, sweep under the rug.
Yeah, both parties don't want this to go to trial because...
But it's going to go to trial anyways.
Yeah, but he may plead something out of it to where it will give him a lesser sentence, so to speak.
Possibly doing some House of Ruth work, which is, of course, a center dedicated to those who've been in spousal abuse situations. Obviously, he's going to have to do some work. They're going to have to do a lot of community service work. And, you know, maybe that could be the case for Ray Rice. Obviously, maybe a 2 to 3 game suspension. I don't see him
getting 2 to 3 games.
I don't see him getting 4 games.
I'm going with 4.
You think it'll be 4?
I'm thinking that's the litmus test.
I think that, you know, it is a bad situation.
Especially if that video happens to leak, even though right now it's evidence, so it can't really leak right now. But if it were to leak and get out there on the internet, on like a smoking gun website, on anything else like that, that will look terrible.
Maybe the Huffington Post or TMZ will probably have the video up, smoking gun. You're looking at the whole Ray Rice situation, and, you know, I believe he could recover from this. Obviously, if he stays healthy and stays the course and does anything he can to repair his image. Granted, it's a shame because Ray Rice, if memory serves me correctly, was one of the leading jersey sales when it comes to women. And now that looks bad.
That and he had a clean slate.
Absolutely.
This is like a first-time offense.
Doting father, you know, he was a doting father, great community guy. And now you have all this out of the woodwork, and, of course, you're going to have other people coming out and saying all these other negative things about him that, you know, he's a jerk outside of the football. He's not really that nice of a guy.
Well, the other guy known to hit a woman that actually has been, you know, has had a decent career in the NFL is Adam Pac-Man Jones.
Yeah.
I mean, he beat up a stripper.
Mm-hmm.
And he was caught on camera beating up a stripper, but it was he was able to rebound from that in, like, what, 8 other arrests?
Yeah, I know. We live in a world where...
So I'm not writing off Ray Rice because of that. No.
We live in a world where you can mess up five times. Look at Cedric Benson, who many Chicago Bears fans thought was a first-round bust until he rebounded with the Cincinnati Bengals later on. How many times did he, serve a jail time?
Well, unless you kill Odin Lloyd, or you're being on trial for killing Odin Lloyd, which is one Aaron Hernandez is. Speaking of that, there was quite an interesting release by an NFL team on Friday.
Deshaun Jackson
of the Philadelphia Eagles.
Scratching my head over that.
It was scratching my head because I'm thinking they couldn't trade him, huh? They couldn't find a person who wanted to pick him up for something else. They wanted to let him go to free agency and try to see if he can get the $10 million that he was asking for.
I mean, are they that confident with their receiving corps that they have to get rid of, in my opinion, their best player?
Their best player who had a career year. And it's like he's entering his seventh year in the league. He's still in the prime of his career, and they release him. Why? Because, it was a few minutes after NJ.com released an article that stated that the Eagles were concerned because they talked to an LA PD detective who said that Deshaun Jackson has maybe some known gang ties to the Crips.
Wow.
Like, he was throwing up gang signs at D'Angelo Hall, allegedly, and plus, there's a picture of him with a known gang member, and you've got a whole bunch of other things that he may or may not have been involved with. It's like a huge gray area in terms of legality, but it's the Aaron Hernandez effect. Because of the Aaron Hernandez effect, now if you're essentially guilty by... I said essentially. You're guilty by association.
Absolutely.
But essentially worked in that situation.
You are the company you keep, right?
I mean, unfortunately, I guess. I mean, we all know bad people in our life.
Yeah, true.
We've come across some bad people as well. I'm not going to get into a social debate about it because the fact of the matter is we now live in a post-Aaron Hernandez world in the NFL to where the New England Patriots were severely embarrassed by this, so much that they wanted to write his jersey sales off the record by letting fans trade them in. And also, it was just a huge black mark on that franchise to have one of their star tight ends get in trouble for the murder of Odin Lloyd.
They pretty much gave him the Chris Benoit treatment.
Yeah, they wrote him off completely, and it was, NFL teams saw that, and they said, we're not going to have this happen to our team. We do not want this to happen to our team. And you see that with Deshaun Jackson, and he released a statement saying that he wanted to thank the Eagles organization. He wanted to thank, Andy Reid for drafting him. It seemed like he left with his statement. It would paint the picture that he left on good terms. But then you have, this article stating that they were worried about his alleged gang ties. And he said that the report saying that I was released because of gang ties, I've never been in any gang in my life. And to think that this was the reason for my release is both irresponsible and reckless. And I can agree with that, but if you think that it didn't have something to do with it in terms of the timing of the article, I mean, at that point, that just wipes his trade value out the window. If it had nothing to, it had at least something to do with it. If you don't think that, that is also irresponsible and reckless, as hard as it is to say, because the guy hasn't been committed of a crime.
Do you think, going to Deshaun Jackson here, do you think that an NFC East rival is dialing him up right now?
I would go with an AFC East team. I was thinking New England.
That would be... See, I don't think that's going to happen. I think he's staying in the NFC. I would not be surprised if we see him in a Giants or Redskins uniform, or maybe the Seattle Seahawks will give him a call, make their post-Super Bowl team even better.
Wow, I know he will make whatever team better, whoever signs with him, because he's still pretty good. And he's still pretty damn fast. Now, hopefully he doesn't, focus on his rap career too much.
Yeah, and then obviously, segueing into another segment, we shouldn't be making any NCAA bracket decisions anytime soon.
Yeah, because we kind of sucked.
Ray, why don't you go with yours first? What have you gotten right so far?
Well, I did have a perfect northern part of the South division.
Good for you.
Yeah, I predicted Florida versus UCLA, and then I had I did predict Florida versus UCLA, and Florida is now in the Elite Eight. However, I was one of those many people, in fact, all people, who picked Ohio State over Dayton.
Yeah, I picked Ohio State over Dayton, obviously. Didn't help me out much. Also, Duke, another team that usually finds a way to advance to the Sweet 16 every year.
Mercer, have
Mercer on me, sir. Definitely didn't make the cut there.
Lives are going to be in Waylon Mercer's hands.
Going into another wrestling-related, Stephen F. Austin stuns VCU, who, by the way, VCU – all right, I got to tell this story because
– yes, please tell me your story about with one Fox 45's Bruce Cunningham.
All right, so last week on Facebook, I posted my NCAA bracket, and obviously I showed you who my final four, my final two, and my champion were going to be, obviously, Louisville, who, thankfully, on my bracket is still alive to contend as a national champion. I had Virginia Commonwealth as a final four Cinderella team. And same with Creighton. I guess you could say I had Creighton advancing. Of course, they didn't last very long. So I had VCU in the final four, and I see a notification on Facebook, and it's a comment from one Bruce Cunningham, and he says, "VCU, really?" So, not knowingly looking at my bracket again, I say, well, I know VCU is representing a weaker conference in terms of the bracket, which was my fatal mistake saying that on Facebook, and to a former Virginia Commonwealth graduate, or I should say alum, Bruce Cunningham.
And he is a hardcore alum. He loves his VCU.
Absolutely. And I said, I just think that Shaka Smart is good enough to coach his team to the Final Four. So then Bruce Cunningham says, weak conference? They had six teams from the Atlantic 10 in the tournament this year. So then I had to do some research, and I had to look at the tournament bracket, and I had to see teams like St. Louis in there as well. So I'm counting, and I'm like, holy crap, he's right. So I'm like, Mr. Cunningham, I apologize. I rescind my earlier comment. I did not mean they were a weak conference. Still, I'm pulling for VCU. So Bruce in good light said, hey, you know I take my VCU and my Atlantic 10 very seriously. And he obviously added a little smiley face at the end to note that it was all right. So, in short, if I were to be criticized by anybody on social media, I'd glad it was a legend like Bruce Cunningham. So, Bruce, you are welcome for the free plug here on the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
Yeah, I used to be the producer of a show.
Me too, back at WNST.
Wow, what do we have in common here?
I know, right?
Small world.
Yeah, so obviously Arizona, who was my number one seed, I had them go into the Elite Eight, which they are now in right now, but I had them losing to the Creighton Cretans, who couldn't make it.
It's not their mascot.
Damn it, they are their mascot, okay? They're the mascot in my eyes. And obviously that didn't work out because Creighton couldn't get past Baylor. And now Wisconsin, who I had in my Sweet 16, they wouldn't get past them either. Actually, I believe Wisconsin did last night, now that I recall that. See, this is what's so crazy about the bracket. You have so many of these games going on that you're trying to figure out who's in and who's out. And, of course, nowadays you know who's in and who's out because, hey, nobody is winning Warren Buffett's billion-dollar giveaway. So, Mr. Buffett, you can sleep well at night. And, once again, thank you for the plug.
He would have slept well even if he did give away $1 billion.
What's he, like $69 billion? I think that's his net worth.
This guy is freaking freakishly loaded, and he became like a celebrity after the 07 recession.
I wonder how come he hasn't been appointed to the White House as the economic advisor.
Okay, I'm going to give you a little bit of trivia here about Creighton, because you think the Creighton Cretans? There is no way, even on a cold day in hell, that would be their name.
What is their name?
Well, why don't you guess? Let's play along here.
The Creighton Hawks.
Close.
The Creighton Falcons?
It's a bird.
The Creighton Seagulls? I'm just joking.
Think Toronto.
The Creighton Blue Jays. The Creighton Jays.
All right, and I'll give you another trivia question. What is their mascot's name?
Bluey? I don't know. Creighton?
Bluey? You were close again.
Blue?
Billy.
Billy.
Billy the Blue Jay.
Billy the Blue Jay.
Yes, the Creighton Blue Jays.
They're still the Creighton Cretans. I'm sorry.
The Cretans.
They are Cretans. And going to the Midwest
The Blab?
The Midwest Blabber. The Midwest Bracket. Louisville's still alive in my bracket. Obviously, Michigan's still alive. I'm hoping for a Elite Eight matchup between Louisville and Michigan. Of course, Michigan's going to have to get past their Sweet 16 matchup, as well as Louisville. Of course, at the end of this podcast, the addition of this podcast, they're facing Kentucky tonight. So a legendary matchup between John Calipari and Pitino. So it's going to be a pretty good matchup there.
I was really disappointed that San Diego State couldn't beat Arizona. I was like, I had them in my Elite Eight, but I didn't get them in my Final Four. Guess who I had in my Final Four, by the way?
Who?
Your Cretans.
I had them. I had the Cretans in my Final Four. I had VCU. I had Villanova. Villanova couldn't beat Milwaukee. What the hell?
I had Florida, Memphis, Creighton, and Wichita State.
Delaware was also one of my Cinderella teams. I had them going into the Elite Eight. Of course, they couldn't get past Michigan State. By the way, President Obama, you may not agree with his politics, but when it comes to picking the bracket, he's usually dead on. And so far, he's been dead on about Michigan State. I'm shocked. I didn't think they'd make it this far.
Yeah, well, it's somebody else's bracket that's not mine. I don't care.
I know, but you gotta admit, though, usually when you're picking a national champion and they make it far, it does make you pretty credible in picking your bracket.
Well, I picked Florida to be the national champions, and
they're still alive.
So far, so good.
It's me and Louisville. I'm hoping for a red final national championship matchup. Louisville wins, I'm hoping. And I'm hoping I get some kind of compensation for picking them right on my on the bracket I filled out online. I know I won't win $1 billion, but I'm hoping for something. Maybe a free T-shirt. But obviously, I'm going to throw the bracket away because obviously, maybe I jinxed Louisville. They're probably going to lose tonight against Kentucky.
I want to frame mine.
You're going to frame yours?
Yeah, it's such a beautiful disaster.
It's art. It's a work of art. You know what? Some people in places like California and New York, they probably would consider that art, and they may pay you $15,000 for that.
All right.
I call this a beautiful sports disaster by Atkinson. You don't even put Ray. Atkinson is just your art name right there.
Atkinson.
Like Picasso.
So Picasso, we've got Michelangelo.
Da Vinci.
Da Vinci. Atkinson.
Atkinson.
I like the sound of that.
There you go. So frame that baby up. Beautiful disaster. Oh, and tomorrow, March 29th, 2014, marks the 30-year anniversary of a sports disaster in Baltimore.
Yeah, thanks for the sports troll for reminding us.
Yeah, and it's kind of tough for me to talk about because it was hard to see my, grandfather go a certain amount of years without seeing a pro football team. And
how about ourselves? I mean, we were born without a football team in this state.
Yeah, I mean, I was born in 1985, which was a year removed from it. You were born in 87, which was 3 years removed from it. So it was a tough time being a Baltimore native, Maryland native, I should say, growing up, unless you were choosing between the Washington Redskins and the Pittsburgh Steelers, of course.
Or the Philadelphia Eagles.
Or the Philadelphia. I don't know about that. I mean, Philadelphia, look at it this way. The Washington Redskins, I will give them credit. They won 3 Super Bowls early in the 80s and the early 90s, I believe. And Pittsburgh Steelers had 4 to their name. Of course, that was in the disco era, but still, that was a nice little notch on their belt. And, of course, you had the San Francisco 49ers who had their glory in the 80s, and even the Dallas Cowboys, who I despise more than anything because they can't get off my television.
No.
Yeah.
Especially Tony Romo. The Tony Romo
and Jason Garrett
were at the Duke Mercer game.
Yeah, if you had any reason to hate him, it's that right there. The two biggest douche nozzles in all of sports, if I can say that.
The two biggest Robert Irsays in sports.
Yeah, so marking back on the 30-year anniversary, which was on March 29th, 1984. Of course, it was on a Thursday that this happened.
A wet, snowy morning.
Yeah, a lot of Mayflower trucks.
A lot of Mayflower trucks. One Mayflower truck guy was laughing, I think, and another person was, I'm not really sure. But you had different people that were either humble about it or kind of smart about it, and yeah, the whole eminent domain thing that came out and freaking holding a gun holding a gun to Bob Irsay's head, figuratively. And you had all of these things that came about where Bob Irsay had his little tour around courting different cities to move the team because he was not satisfied with Memorial Stadium. And he already had hatred from Baltimore fans as it was because he traded Johnny Unitas.
Yeah, of course, that was a that was a very sour taste left in the fans' mouth, especially considering and that Colts, Unitas was that franchise.
And the Colts were just bad under his regime, just terrible under his regime. And then they go to Indianapolis. They the mayor of Indianapolis arranges the Mayflower trucks to move him out, and he had a relationship with a guy from Mayflower, and they moved him down, and the rest was history. I think what this happened 30 years ago, we've got the Ravens now, and they've gotten two Super Bowls under their record, while the Colts, well,
they went to two Super Bowls, won one, and lost one.
Yeah, they won one, but the Ravens have more Super Bowl wins than the Indianapolis Colts do, and the Indianapolis Colts had a 12-year head start on the Ravens.
Right.
So I think, all in all, Baltimore, in hindsight, got the better end of the deal, even though it took 12 years. It took the whole expansion debacle to do it, and it took Art Modell moving a team out of Cleveland and was, that time, was forced to keep the records in Cleveland, and they created a new team here in Baltimore, and they built a new stadium in Baltimore. You had the Camden Yards Sports Complex, you had Camden Yards Oriole Park, and you also had M&T Bank Stadium, which was originally called Raven Stadium at Camden Yards, and they're right across the street from each other. Without that whole thing going on, that maybe we would still have the horseshoe, and yeah, there would be no Camden Yards and no Raven Stadium.
Possibly.
But yeah, so you got to look at the positives that came out of that deal with Robert Irsay moving that team. The only thing that I really wish that they could have done was the fact that, let me see here. You had, when was the Baltimore Arena built?
The Baltimore Arena, I believe, was built, well, then known as the Civic Center. I think it was built in maybe the late 50s, early 60s. Right around there.
Yeah, and it was pretty,
it's been around for, it was,
it was
around
pretty
for
much,
quite
it
some
was,
time.
It was outdated when it was built.
Mm-hmm.
So they couldn't get a new arena out of the whole Stadium Authority thing. But at the same time, though, you got Camden Yards and you've got Raven Stadium, and you have Baltimore as a pretty good sports juggernaut right now.
Well,
despite the inferiority complex.
Well, obviously, you know, you're traveling back in time here. Then Baltimore Mayor William Donald Schaefer, he asked the Maryland General Assembly for funding towards making Memorial Stadium better. Of course, they the legislature gave them and approved for a $15 renovation. Of course, $7.5 million of that went towards the Colts' needs, while the other $7.5 million went to the Orioles' needs. So, you know, at the end of this, you look at it this way: Robert Irsay, of course, he's damned forever in Baltimore fans' minds as this drunken loon who ruined football for better part of 12 years for Baltimore sports fans. And of course, you had the Baltimore Stallions come in the 90s. They won the Grey Cup and kind of restored faith in football in Baltimore. Of course, that was short-lived once the Cleveland Browns franchise moved to Baltimore and became the Baltimore Ravens. But at the end of the day, and it's kind of component with most sports, how business is handled, it all comes down to money. And I feel like, you know, I felt like Robert Irsay was just this stubborn man who, you know, he wanted these things, he wanted all of these crazy things to happen that were way out of the budget of the state of Maryland. And it was literally pointing a gun to his head saying, if you don't give me the money, somebody else will, and I'm going to take your team. I'm going to take your history. I'm going to take everything. And the Baltimore Colts had an illustrious football history.
And it depends on who you ask and who was pointing the gun at whose head. There's different accountabilities on each side about what is going on and what is happening. And there are people that will defend Bob Irsay, and there are people that will defend William Donald Schaefer in the Maryland General Assembly. I think it happened, you know, this thing happened 30 years ago. Let's mark the 30-year occasion. But Baltimore has, as a whole, moved on. But you have the people that want to hold on to the grudge because they did take the team history and the records with them. They have to consider Johnny Unitas an Indianapolis Colt now. They have to consider Art Donovan an Indianapolis Colt.
Lenny Moore.
Even though those guys don't consider themselves Indianapolis Colts. They consider themselves Baltimore Colts.
Probably never stepped foot in the state of Indiana.
Yeah, and you have that. And you know what the first instance I heard that Baltimore had a football team when I was growing up as a little kid?
When?
Do you remember a show on Nickelodeon called The Adventures of Pete and Pete?
The Adventures of Pete and Pete? Yeah, I remember that. The two ginger brothers.
Yeah, the older ginger brother.
the two ginger brothers.
The older brother. He, he was doing a science project on radio waves.
Really?
And he was talking about the greatest game ever played.
Right, the 1958 NFL championship between the Colts and the New York Giants.
Yes.
Of course, that's where Pat Summerall got his nickname, point after try.
Yeah.
And point attempt. Yeah.
Yep. And he was talking about how radio waves travel through space, and he said, what if here we are 40-odd years later, and an alien race is viewing that game for the first time? And I was like, wait a minute. Mom? Dad? And I'm like an 8-year-old kid. Baltimore had a football team?
Yeah, they did. Also, relating to this issue here, I was going to post a Facebook question of the night. Obviously, we're going to be giving away a prize for the best comment on this subject. And folks, a little tidbit before I give out this question and post it on Facebook. Spelling and grammar will help your argument 100%. I mean, Ray, you got to agree with me on that, right?
Spelling and grammar will help your argument 100%. What will help
it makes you sound credible.
Yes, it does.
Yes, it makes you sound credible. Especially in the age of the smartphone, which is supposed to make you sound smart, maybe smarter than you already are.
Except for autocorrect. That makes us sound weird.
Yeah. All right, so here's the Facebook question of the night. Did the Colts leaving Baltimore have a negative impact on the fan base, even after the Ravens arrived in 1996? And, of course, you post your response to that, whether it's a positive or a negative, whether you agree or disagree with that sentiment. Leave the hashtag Baltimore Colts, so we know you're participating. And your prize will be a $25 gift card to Midtown Barbecue in Mount Vernon, historic Mount Vernon.
There we go.
Yeah. Also, congratulations to Antonio Alvarez, who won our trivia question last week, who participated in our highest-rated show that we ever had on the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All, and many more to come.
What was the...
The answers?
Yeah, I mean, I would say...
Larry Doby. Jeff Conine with all those on-base percentages.
One of the more underrated Orioles of the year.
I'm a Jeff Conine guy.
I'm a huge Jeff Conine fan.
And the third, of course, was Hank Bauer, Earl Weaver, and Joe Altobelli. So, those were your answers right there. And folks, you listen to this podcast and you follow the rules, you will win prizes.
You win stuff, you get a little more educated, and you feel better about yourself.
And you get an on-air shout-out from us.
You won't, however, get two-minute rants because we are out of time.
Yeah, time flies when you're having fun.
Yep, unfortunately.
Time flies when you're having fun.
We will have another show on Tuesday.
And another prize to give out.
Flu pending? Yeah, I could regress to another flu, or you could have one.
Let's not hope for that.
No.
Let's just wrap the baby up and hope for well wishes.
I'm Ray Atkinson.
I am Josh Hall.
Well wishes, everybody.